Hey team, welcome to the off-season. The off-season is an exploration of athletic health, recovery, and performance told through stories of athletes and their medical and training team. I hope you enjoy. Now for a quick but mandatory medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of naturopathic medicine or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. Use of this material is at user's own risk. Listeners should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical conditions they may have and should seek assistance from their trusted healthcare professional for any condition. This podcast does not speak on behalf of naturopathic medicine and does not represent the views of the profession as a whole. Hey, we're back with another episode of The Off-Season. Today I have on Ian Rowan Legg, who is a strength and conditioning coach out of Acadia, and he's getting heavily into the performance management of esports. So this one was super interesting to me. The furthest venture I've got into gaming would probably have been Mortal Kombat on Sega Genesis. So the sport has just grown so much, and there's so much to consider when we talk about performance optimization. So for all you gamers out there, I mean, this is stuff that could potentially change your performance, and I think you should definitely take a listen. All of it makes sense to me when we think about how the brain works and how the body works, and reoxygenating the brain and getting your body moving. And, you know, timing of food is huge too. So we talk about all of these things to optimize your esport performance. Check it out. I hope you enjoy.
Hey, Ian, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. What's going on today?
Not a whole lot. Get up a little later than expected, but going to head into work a little bit after this, get some training in, coach some groups, and work into the night a little bit later. So it'll be good.
Yeah, that sounds good. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your background?
Okay, so my name is Ian Rowan Legg. I'm a strength and conditioning coach currently working out of a facility called Atlantic Sports Performance in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. I went to school at Acadia University, did my kinesiology degree there, got a lot of strength and conditioning experience, went out west, did my master's while training the football team at the University of Regina, came back here, hit the big old pandemic wall, and now I'm working in the private sector from the university setting, and now I'm also kind of diving a little bit more into the esports world, working with gamers, specifically with a company called Gamer to Athlete, and our approach towards kind of improving health in gamers is, you know, approaching their health more holistically, not only understanding that we need to improve their daily habits physically, but also approach their mental health and mental well-being as well to improve the performance in game, but just improve overall bodily function and health.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I think like the last console I might have played was like Guitar Hero, or before that would have been like Mortal Kombat on Sega Genesis or something like that. So this world is like completely foreign to me, but I came across an article about like maximizing performance for esport athletes, and I had really never thought about it. You know, I never really like considered how much would go into performance management on that end. But if you really think about it, like there's repetitive strain injuries, there's like a nutrition component that would, you know, be really beneficial for brain health. And then you kind of pitched this idea to me. So I was like, yeah, definitely. Like, let's chat about it. So what brought you to esports, or how did you kind of start getting involved in that?
So I've always been a pretty big gamer. When I was young, I would always game, but I also did play a lot of sports when I was young, so I was able to balance that lifestyle pretty well. And for a while I got away from gaming just because school was so busy, and eventually got back into it and I was hooked immediately. So always trying to manage my time around that, but I'm just really interested in, you know, the competitive scene that's kind of built up around gaming. It's something that's really made its way into popular culture recently, which I don't think people realize like the magnitude of for a long time. You know, when people like Post Malone and Travis Scott were having these virtual concerts in Fortnite, which is a free game, and pulling in like millions of people, these virtual worlds, you know, now we have these rappers, but we have pro athletes like buying into teams. Like, it's become this really big part of society, and it's really interesting just to see more people get involved, because for a long time we had this perception that, you know, gamers were these, you know, nerdy guys that would sit in a dark room and play video games. But now, you know, they're making six figures, some of them making millions of dollars and they're being treated as if they're professional athletes. But it's just a totally different type of sport, and it's a totally different culture that surrounds it compared to traditional sports. So I thought it was a really interesting area to look into. And it's, you know, being a strength and conditioning coach, it's very much the Wild West of performance right now on the physical side, just because we understand how, you know, physical fitness can improve our overall health, but we don't understand the direct link to esport performance, because that is also very diverse. We have so many different genres of games, and really right now we're trying to, and a lot of teams are trying to find the link between certain physical metrics and how that's going to actually improve in-game performance.
Definitely, that makes sense. What do we know anything like definitively right now in terms of performance management, or does it kind of go back to the foundations of all performance management?
Performance management being like, talking like in-game performance type of thing.
Yeah, I guess like maybe there's two different criteria there. So for performance management on my end with like high level athletes, you know, it's sleep management, nutrition, training, breathing, all that sort of stuff. So is it really the same kind of thing just applied to esport?
Yeah, I would say it is the same. You just have varying levels of mastery depending on where you look. And I think, again, going back to the culture, you know, traditionally you see, you know, pictures of guys sitting in a basement being very unhealthy. It's a very sedentary activity, obviously. You know, these guys like chugging Mountain Dew and eating Doritos, but I think that's starting to really change. You know, we understand how, you know, sleeping poorly and eating improperly affects our ability to focus, our ability to, kind of maintain those levels of energy. Sleep is probably a big one. We see, you know, gamers staying up really late trying to cram all this practice in because they don't really understand how mental fatigue sets in versus physical fatigue. You know, we can go outside and play street ball and we can try and play for 8 hours, but eventually our body's going to realize we don't have the energy to function anymore. Like, we're going to be tired and dizzy, and we're going to recognize that. But sometimes that line isn't there for gamers. You know, mental fatigue starts to kick in and we start to see a drop in performance, but we kind of keep pushing ourselves to try and push that mental endurance when we eventually realize that we're not actually getting benefit from this, right? So yeah, I think kind of along the same lines, but when it comes to physical fitness, like, that's still something that we don't know a lot about and how it's directly affecting our in-game performance. Because, you know, even these big esports organizations, they have these, they're working with teams like Red Bull and Nike, and they're doing all this performance testing, doing VO2 max testing, and they don't really know even themselves what they're looking for yet. They just want to have these metrics and then go back to their in-game performance and see if one's dropping, what's happening in-game. You know, it's a lot of just trying to recognize everything that's there and then dial it back. But I'd say the same things apply, like sleep, nutrition, physical fitness. It's just how we apply it that has to change for that individual athlete.
Yeah, for sure. So based on kind of what's coming out so far, I know there's not tons of research, but what have you been seeing or what has been interesting to you in terms of how to optimize, you know, an esport athlete?
Yeah. So aerobic exercise is probably the biggest thing on the physical side that we see to be beneficial from a cognitive standpoint. Now, I'm just going to back that up a little bit because I feel like ergonomics was the big thing for a long time. We have the sedentary individual. Let's improve the environment that they're in to make them feel the best, to keep them focused for those long sessions. And again, that is extremely beneficial, and that can go a long way in decreasing our risk of overuse injuries that could be associated with, you know, repetitive movement in poor positions or just being in those poor positions in general. But, you know, that's a little bit different than actually improving our ability to, you know, react more quickly or more accurately, make a decision in game. And there is a lot of research showing that, you know, moderate to high intensity exercise is hugely beneficial in producing you know, cognitive improvements in an athlete. And there's even, you know, chronic versus acute effects. You know, if we go on a, I think if we exercise around 70% VO2 max, that seems to be like the sweet spot for producing like an acute response in an athlete. But then like, how does that apply? Can we have someone go on a bike at 70% VO2 max for 20 minutes before they go on stage? How long is that actually going to improve the performance? Is it worth it? But then, you know, from a high intensity standpoint, we can also have, you know, chronic adaptations, actual adaptations of the brain to be, better able to, you know, how do I say this, make decisions under high stress, I suppose, because they're better able to manage that high level of stress. There is some research suggesting towards like a reaction speed versus accuracy trade-off. That's still kind of new, but a lot of it's very, very fresh, I guess you could say. People are trying to make these links where they aren't necessarily there. And a lot of the game is mental. So people don't always see the connection between the physical and the mental side. But I do know some people in the States that are trying to kind of better standardize how we measure performance and create these links. It's still very much in the works. The great thing is, though, being a video game, being in a computer, and being virtually all numbers in a system, we can literally track everything. We can quantify every movement. We can quantify where someone is on a map, their XYZ position. We can see, you know, if it's a first person shooter, we can see their accuracy. We can see all these things. So we have the potential to draw these links in the numbers. It's just that it's not quite as developed yet on the research side.
Yeah. What about this company that you're working for? Like, what are they starting to find? Or like, are athletes, esport athletes, like really coming in and asking for these performance changes? Or like, I don't know, it's still a slow grind in the conventional sport world to get people adapted to, you know, certain training techniques or nutrition adaptations and stuff like that. What are you finding in esports?
Yeah, honestly, I think that's a good point. Like, people aren't ready to buy into the idea that's going to make them better. I would say the biggest thing I see is that people just want to be healthier and feel better and be more confident. That's probably the biggest thing. And I have, you know, team sport athletes that want that same thing. But in, you know, the gaming world, when people have this perception of who you are, especially if you're very sedentary, you're going to be prone to, you know, potentially gaining more fat mass if you're not doing any physical activity. And so they become really confident behind a screen, but they lose their confidence in person. And so a lot of them just want to be healthier, but they just don't know the steps to get there. And there's a lot of, there's a streamer, he's actually a doctor. I think he goes by Dr. K, and his big thing, he actually talks about video game addiction, because that is very much a big thing in the gaming world. And a lot of these people have very poor mental health, and it's kind of an escape for them. So honestly, just general well-being is a big thing for a lot of them. For you to go from gaming in your basement to, say, a professional level where you're on stage and you're already not very good at managing anxiety, and then you're put in front of this audience, that's very stressful. So a lot of it is really just this mental aspect, overcoming barriers. And again, we want to be able to use, physical exercise to potentially improve that. You know, if you're more physically fit, then maybe you're more readily able to kind of enter that parasympathetic state and manage that stress from a physical standpoint, because we know there is a pretty heavy physiological response with this new research that's coming out showing that gamers are reaching heart rates of anywhere from 140 to 180 beats per minute. Now, would we see the same thing in a highly trained, physically trained individual? Maybe not. Maybe it's their individual level of fitness. But there's a lot of different ways we need to approach it, I feel. Again, we just need to be looking into this more and creating those connections.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, in the position that you're in, like, and even for myself too, there's a lot of stuff that haven't been explored yet. So we kind of take, you know, theoretical approaches to management in the best interest of whoever's coming to see us, right? So if you had, so like, what's a really popular game? Forgive me, like, I don't even know that.
League of Legends, that's a big one.
Okay, so for League of Legends, like a League of Legends athlete comes into you looking to like optimize their performance. How would you like walk them through this, or like what would you convey to them that's like really important that they start to manage or work on?
So I'd say probably the biggest thing is recognizing what they do outside of gaming. Because again, if we're going to approach this from a performance standpoint, you didn't get to the level you're at doing any of this. Like, you're obviously incredibly gifted or very good at the game from putting in a lot of practice, but what can we do outside of your gaming, or what kind of habits can we get you to do that's going to improve you when you're behind that screen? So yeah, a lot of that is sleep management. Like, these guys are exposed to a glaring screen in their eyes for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. Maybe we cut some of that blue light out earlier so we can improve your sleep patterns. Hydration, that's a big thing if you're gaming, and this while you're gaming as well, obviously, but making sure you're drinking enough water, making sure you're eating the right types of foods to actually fuel that session. I know there's some research looking at like keto and brain function, cognitive function. I'm not fully in on that yet, but trying to get them to consume like maybe carbs for their game, or like regular snacks every 2 to 3 hours while they're gaming so they can keep that focus. Breathing's like a huge one, I would say. Such a useful tool for kind of regulating parasympathetic activity. And we use that with like our traditional sport athletes as well, but I think that's such an underutilized tool. Even having them just breathe through their nose instead of always just mouth breathing all the time. Incorporating regular exercise and even just like mobility between sessions. That's one thing we tried to do, was create this kind of sample program for athletes where if your gaming schedule is this long, say you're going to be gaming for 5 or 6 hours, every, you know, hour, half hour, 2 hours, depending on what you're doing, we'd incorporate a series of stretches, or, you know, like a little core routine for you to do, just so we can get more blood flow, get more movement, and get you out of those positions. I think that's the biggest thing with big thing with posture, is everyone thinks there's these evil positions. It's like, no, well, the reason it's a problem is because you're sitting there in that position for 8 hours, right? If you were moving every half hour, it wouldn't be a problem. But, you know, when you're at a high level and these guys are just locked in focus, it's hard to tell them that, hey, you should get up every hour and go for a walk, or not look at this bright screen. But it's, yeah, it's interesting trying to get buy-in on that side, especially when a lot of these things that you're telling them are almost like too simple. Like, these are very, very small changes that are going to have a huge impact. It's not going to look like traditional sports, because you're not running down a football field trying to hit this 250-pound guy in front of you. You're in front of a computer screen. So the approach has to be different, but still in the mindset of our ultimate goal is to improve your performance.
Yeah, it makes so much sense too. And like, even on a day-to-day level, like, most of us are sitting at a computer for 8 hours a day at work. And oftentimes people, you know, lives are so busy that they'll try to get in an hour training session at the gym. And I just kind of speak to a lot of people, if you just moved more throughout the day, like, you would be in less pain. You would be able to probably do more in the afternoon because you had more blood flow, so that like productivity decline doesn't happen, you know, in the mid afternoon or after you eat lunch. So a lot of these things, like in research for other areas of life, make a lot of sense. So the application to esport, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but again, we're always looking for that magic, you know, performance enhancing pill we can take to increase cognition or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And I think we have to, as much as it's just making kind of like implications, we do have to do that to get that buy-in. Like, if I say to an esport athlete, go for a run because it's going to make you healthier and you're going to feel better while you game, it's like, I already knew that. But if I say, go for a run because it's going to improve blood flow and oxygenation for your brain, which is going to mean sending more catecholamines and getting quicker responses, quicker firing within your brain. You might actually be able to make decisions faster, which can improve your gaming. And suddenly they're like, oh, I didn't know that. So, you know, education is a big piece of that as well, or at least framing what you're doing in the context of what their goal is. And I think that's been probably the biggest issue, is they don't see the connection, but you have to create that and allow them to see the massive benefit that can come from just exercising or eating healthier. But it hasn't been targeted to that population in that way before, right?
Yeah, I think this is really cool because, as you had said earlier, like the idea that we have of most gamers is kind of, you know, that Mountain Dew and Doritos, as you had mentioned, right? And I think, like, you know, a lot of mental health issues could go along with that, and a lot of, you know, anxiety, and in terms of being in that sympathetic state. So for listeners who don't fully kind of follow that, that our autonomic nervous system has two branches, sympathetic and parasympathetic. And sympathetic is almost when you're stuck in it for too long, is that fight or flight mechanism. And it almost looks like anxiety for all intents and purposes, right? So yeah, I think, like, as you had said, the breath work, the nutrition, all that sort of stuff would really contribute to being able to control your breath during a game and make better decisions. So you're not, you know, playing through anxiety versus just a really controlled headspace. Hey.
Yeah. And that's been a really big thing. You know, one thing that we do with our team sport athletes is we try to do this, we call neurotyping, and basically taking personality traits, looking at their personality traits and using that to sort of imply their physiology and what they might respond to. And you're always going to have these people that are very, what we consider like type 3, high anxiety, high epinephrine, clear dopamine very quickly. And how they respond to entering like a stressful competitive situation is different than someone on the other end that's maybe low epinephrine and they don't clear dopamine quite as quickly. And they're generally more energetic, happy people. But when you put them on stage in a stressful environment, that's where you're going to see the difference of like people that can feed on the audience and really, you know, get in the zone, get fired up from that stress or just the situation that they're in, or those people that start to really struggle. And so how can we incorporate some of these practices when they enter competition in order to regulate their kind of natural responses to stress and get them prepared to actually go in and perform? And I think the acute response, like we do a lot of this again with our team sport athletes, where we might have a very, what I would consider like a tendon driven athlete that responds very well to plyometrics and they're very twitchy. And we could send them into their sprints after doing some intensive plyos and get a potentiator response on their sprint, versus on the other end of that, having like a muscle driven athlete, they may be very, very sensitive to more intensive plyometric exercises. And so to get a beneficial potentiating response for their performance, we have to take a different approach. I think we can incorporate the same thing with esports on the exercise side of thing, which I kind of mentioned earlier. Can we give them some sort of aerobic exercise that's going to potentiate that? Or should we get them doing breathing that's going to help them regulate that stress a little better? I think there is a lot of, you know, like game day in performance things that we can start to incorporate that I think we do have enough reason to believe that they should work. But again, how easy is it going to be to convince a gamer to get on an exercise bike backstage and tell him that he's going to, you know, game better after he does this? It's a strange world for sure.
Yeah, that is really cool of like trying to apply that all together. And most of like the social media videos you see of gamers or like them kind of losing their shit, like throwing controllers at televisions or getting their game console shut off and them just losing their minds and stuff. And I know that's probably definitely not representative of the entire population, but, and then also like being marketed, you know, Red Bull and sympathetic driven supplementation to like get you amped up for the sport. I think that's very interesting that like really we'd probably want to calm them down if anything.
Yeah. And that's been like a big thing, as these new like gamer supplements that are really just, I would say, glorified pre-workouts, or just more like the nootropic side of a pre-workout. And, you know, I think that's something that people shouldn't rely on even when it comes to like working out. It's like, if you need this to get to the gym, there's probably an underlying issue that you should be addressing, especially with gamers when most of them game at night and they go in and they start gaming at 8 p.m. and they're taking these powders that are just, you know, caffeine and stimulants. It's like, well, is this really beneficial for the long run? You're probably influencing your sleep. So you're going to go to bed, get a poor sleep, wake up the next day tired, and then keep taking this because you're tired from taking it the day before. You know, you get in this vicious cycle of needing something to kind of fuel you. And even a touch on like tilting there, what you're talking about, people getting angry, people being on tilt, basically meaning they get frustrated and it influences their performance. And then again, it's another cycle of I'm playing poorly, getting angry, making wrong decisions because of that headspace that you're in, and then continually doing bad. And it's funny, I was talking to Landon, I think his last name is Gorbenko. He lives in Toronto and he has this company called Power Up Academy, and they focus on the mental performance side of things. And they know a lot of guys, even like pro players, that when they get, say, like on tilt, they'll go on an alternative account, like a second account they have, and play on that because they know they're tilting, they know they're doing poorly. And they're really just feeding that mentality of, you know, I'm just going to keep going in even though I know I'm playing poorly. And it's kind of a negative response, because what you want is be able to manage that versus feed that. And yeah, the mental performance side, it's not my expertise, but it's such a huge component of esports. And I think if we can kind of teach these athletes to manage that a little better and stay focused on their goals, we can see big differences.
Well, we're kind of like huge for repetition too. So I can see if this guy, you know, is on tilt and goes in and plays under a different account, it's like reinforcing that behavior as if it's good, right? And that's kind of the same as all athletes. So technically my thought process would be, if he shut it off, did some breath work, you know, brought it back down to like a parasympathetic level, or kind of like a rest and digest, and then re-entered the game, that would make way more sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think people just get wrapped up in this idea of like, this is where I'm going to be in competition, so I'm going to have to be able to manage that. But I think we need to find that middle of the ground between like what is real, like thoughtful, beneficial practice versus, you know, me just getting angry and continuing to go on. It's the same as I say this, if you're working out way too much and you can't recover from it and you keep going in every day knowing you can't recover and you're not getting better, it's like, why is this happening? It's the same with gaming. If you're continually going in, you know, you're making poor decisions, which are leading to a poor outcome. It's like, why are we going to keep doing this? We're not actually getting better because we're not reproducing a gameplay that's going to actually be useful when it comes to competitive performance.
Yeah. So like, despite the idea, so my headspace, or what I've seen a lot from esports, would be like long duration plays, not wanting to step away from the game, like just going in and spending hours and hours on it, right? So what, and I know that's probably part of how to get good or how to be the best at it, but what functionally, in your opinion, would be like the best way to go about playing a game?
I would say if you have, so I guess it depends if you're playing solo or with a team, but if you're with a team and you're actually like competitive with the game, I would say just treat it like a normal sport. I think there's a little bit more room for, how to say this, more frequent practicing. I don't want to say a long duration, because I feel like that is the biggest issue. I think that's how you start to get burnt out, is really go for these long duration practices day after day. But if you're able to split those up more, so if you go for say like 2 to 3 hours, which could be 2 hours, probably comparable to like a normal sport practice, and then get back to it later, I think that's totally doable. But the biggest thing is just to make that practice meaningful. Like we kind of just discussed, it's like if you go in there and you're just mindlessly going through games, that you're not getting anything out of. It's like, I could go to the gym and do curls day after day, but it's probably not going to make me faster, right? Or if you go in and you half-ass every exercise you do, you're not going to get the same benefit out of it because that level of intent isn't there. I think the same thing applies to games and just every hour that you spend practicing, make sure you are kind of tunnel visioned and focused on what you're doing. Everything that you do has intent behind it. But then once you're off there, just like shut off, do your breathing, like go look at something else, and kind of separating those stimuli. Like one thing I was talking about with some other esports guys the other day is like, we could even take like a Charlie Francis approach to this and go like high-low model, where we have days that are very high practice, you know, longer hours, but we follow that day with something that's very low intensity, or even a full rest day. So we are offsetting that stress with something that allows us to better management or manage it, or get us out of that competitive high stress headspace a little better. And yeah, again, going back to like just throwing in mobility every now and then, I think that's super good for just like maintaining bodily health. A good friend of mine who has a kind of an esports, he has a physio clinic, but he works with a lot of esports athletes. You know, he notices different injuries based on like the different games they play. So something like League of Legends, where you're literally just pointing, clicking areas on the map or different characters, he notices a lot more like wrist issues because there's a lot of kind of wrist movement that goes on and making those decisions, making those actions occur on screen. And so they get a lot of overuse injuries through those tendons in the wrist, versus first person shooters where you're tend to be swinging the mouse around a lot more and your elbows elevated off the table. They notice a lot of issues with, you know, traps and other structures in the shoulder. And so knowing that, we need to kind of recognize the potential risks around our sport, and it's not going to be the same for everyone, but just like any traditional sport, recognizing what these athletes might be prone to, and then giving them things that we can kind of use to kind of manage that in between games so it doesn't become a problem.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to me, like when we have those repetitive use injuries or like these weird pains that people present with, you're just always asking like, what are you doing repetitively day in and day out? And they're often like, well, I didn't hurt it. I didn't like fall on my arm or anything like that. And you're always just looking for, yeah, but like, are you swiping your phone a lot? Or how often are you, you know, doing these repetitive motions? And then sometimes when you get to it, it'll be like, you know, gaming in the evening time and stuff like that. So I think there's obviously a massive difference between like esport gamers and then like just for fun play. Where does it cross the line? Or tell me a little bit about like the two levels.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. It's so much different from traditional sports because what often happens is you go from just being a casual gamer and probably being one of the best gamers kind of in your friend group. And then you might play some, well, more so now they have like tournaments, online tournaments that you can enter. But there isn't like a recruiting system as much like you see in university sports. And that's actually trying to change or starting to change. So that's like a little bit of a lie, but for a long time, all it was is you'd be really good at the game. And then a team would basically recognize you from either like video footage and they'd pick you up and you'd go from being a casual gamer to being a paid esport athlete. And kind of dialing back a little bit. One thing that Landon was talking about at Power Up Academy was there's a huge lack of coachability in a lot of these people because they don't grow up. A lot of them don't grow up playing sports or playing traditional sports. So they aren't exposed to, you know, that feedback and that type of constructive criticism because they've always just been the best at what they're doing. And, you know, that's a huge thing for him is they'd rather have a coachable player that's maybe not quite as good, but they can get him to a higher level than someone who's very talented, but is not willing to receive that constructive criticism because they're probably not going to work well with the team. They're not going to be accountable for their actions. And so, you know, recognizing that this is there's a high level of communication that goes on in the sport that's required for you to be successful, especially if it's like a team-based, objective-based game, that the regular athletes or esport athletes aren't exposed to when they're young. And I think that's a big part of their development. I don't think it's like a natural, something that naturally comes to them. It's something that they have to be taught. But yeah, from going to from casual to pro, it tends to be, you just start out gaming and then they find you. But now we do have some bigger organizations that do have kind of feeder teams where you'll get picked up for like their farm team, and then you'll go work your way up sort of thing. But there isn't quite a strict system involved with it. Like, you have to kind of go out of your way, just like people will send coaches highlight reels on Twitter. You know, you have to go out of your way to make sure people find you. But there wasn't much of a concrete system in place until recently, but that's really starting to change.
Yeah. And in my experience, like for like the conventional sports system, I often find, you know, working with younger athletes, they have no concept of what it takes to make it to the big leagues. You know what I mean? So the amount of off ice training, the amount of out of sport training, the amount of, you know, effort towards nutrition and all that sort of stuff. So what I say to like the younger people that I'm working with is like, you know, all of you guys are good at this. What makes this kid different than you? Potentially because he is sleeping, because he is taking nutrition seriously, because he is like pulling out all the stops to make it. So in your experience for esports, like what is that transition that would gear somebody from like casual to the big leagues, would you say?
I'd say they have to, well, you know, there are people that get to the big leagues without kind of nailing down all those other components. I think more so now we recognize, or they recognize, that it's really important. But I think what can happen for a lot of people is they feel that they need to double down on their actual practice, which may be true, might be not true. But in doing that, I think they need to recognize that if they are increasing their training volume, those other components are much more important to manage during that time. It's like, if you're going to up your practice from 4 to 6 or 8 hours a day, you more so need to be making sure that you get a lot of sleep. You really need to be looking at your nutrition. You really need to be making sure that you're breaking up those sessions with exercise or getting some sort of exercise in your day. But getting more involved with, like, you know, competitive scrimmages and trying to play with higher level esport athletes or in higher level competition is probably the biggest thing that's going to get you recognized. It's like comparing stats. It's like, no one cares if your headshot accuracy is really high if you're playing against people that aren't very good at the game. You know, people want something that actually, or coaches want something that's going to give them actual context as to how good you are at a high level. But also on like the communication side, like they need to see that you have or can have good chemistry working in a team environment. I think that's a huge part, is like kind of knowing what you're going to need to be, who you're going to need to be at that high level, and kind of executing that. And again, on the physical side, it's still not as welcomed or recognized as being that important. But I think as you kind of work your way up and the stress of getting to a high level increases, you need to be working on those little things that are going to help manage that.
When you're talking to Landon, like what are kind of the trends that you guys are starting to see with these athletes? Like, I know it's not fully there to like seek out nutrition advice for esports and all that sort of stuff, but what is starting to like come out of it, or what are you guys starting to see?
Well, I know for him, like there are a lot of esport athletes that do have, you know, like mental health issues. And so a lot of it's really just keeping that at bay and keeping them focused on what they're trying to do.
Would you say it's like chicken or the egg thing, kind of like the reason they have, you know, emphasized mental health issues is because of playing so much and potentially isolation? Or do you think it's something that is kind of innate in all of us, and then the environment kind of brings it out a little bit more?
That's an interesting point. I feel like you're going to have those types of people that you know, aren't as affected by like depression, anxiety in that area of sport. I think it kind of goes both ways. I definitely think that being alone, not kind of socializing in person can have a toll on your mental health. I know there's like a pretty good amount of research that discusses how, you know, lack of socialization can affect your physical health as well. And I think for a lot of people, like gaming is very much a social experience for them. Like they get on. Me personally, like I have no intentions of being a professional gamer, but for me, it's just about getting on and playing with friends. And so I think it is good for a lot of people. And I remember that was something that started, articles came out on this at the beginning of COVID, was how gaming was going to be a great way to kind of connect people during the lockdown, which is funny because a couple of years previously, these same websites were talking about how gaming is going to cause all these mental health issues for people and how it's going to cause them physical health issues. And I think it is all just like context. I think there are people that use video games as an escape from reality and use those to kind of cover up underlying mental issues and, you know, put them away. And then there are other people that, you know, they use that platform for socialization, but they understand that it's not everything. This is not my reality. There's something outside of this. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And then, you know, the future of gaming seems a little bit terrifying with like virtual reality and stuff. So if you can be so isolated now, and then you can enter a different world, like what is going to happen then?
Yeah, that's like a good point. This is a discussion I was actually going to have with someone else as well. It's VR is pretty crazy. And I think, I want to say, what was that documentary on Netflix? Black Mirror, you ever watch that? And that was kind of one of the episodes, right? Is where they have this really realistic virtual reality. I think that it's really cool from my perspective, but it is also very dangerous. I think it's something where people will get really locked in because it is so real. Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that it has the potential to be the greatest thing ever, but also a huge detriment to a lot of people's mental health, depending on the type of person you are.
Yeah, it's like terrifying to me because you could like do whatever in the actual world and then put on this virtual reality and be the person you want to be, right? So with no effort involved, you know? So, and oftentimes like when we don't work for anything, it's almost like more depressive, right? Like you actually put no real effort into this and you still got something, then the valuation on what you got is not that great either, right? And I see that with like a lot of, you know, weight loss patients or people trying to attain goals. If it's just given to you, it's too easy, right? So that kind of escalates like a depressive mental state, I would say, at times. So if everyone's just entering this virtual reality space and not like doing any work physically at all to get to where they want to go, I think that would be a little bit of a scary world for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because you need that sense of achievement, right? Like I'm okay putting in a lot of work now, knowing that I'm hopefully going to eventually get that at the end of the day. That's interesting. And I think that's why you have like quest lines and games, and people can have that sense of achievement, but it's like, this isn't real. As hard as that is for some people to understand, but it's that's a whole different world. I'm interested to see where that goes. And I feel like that's going to be a big area of esport research in the future as this starts to grow.
Yeah, and just everything's like theoretical right now, but I just can't even imagine. Like, I'm sure people will just check out of reality if the virtual reality world is that much better, right? And then like, what would that look for their, you know, people's social life in terms of, you know, going to a job or actually showing up and stuff like that. So I think like, obviously, hopefully things will be put in place to manage some of this, but the thought of it, I know it sounds like pretty pessimistic on my end, but it'll definitely be interesting to see what comes down the line. Hey.
Yeah, well, when you think about right now, I mean, we're all basically just androids. We live in this totally separate world on our phone. We're constantly connected to the internet. We have the world at our fingertips. I don't think it's going to seem so extreme at first, just because of what already exists. It's going to be a really cool but not massive advancement on what's already out there. But I think it's going to be a problem when, you know, marketing companies start to find their way in there. It's like Instagram now versus 6 years ago. Like the amount of separate advertising that's on there today. And so you see this with like TikTok. I had this conversation with someone before about TikTok, where like you don't actually have to follow people to have this content exposed to you. So you can potentially be influenced by an outside source that you're not choosing to follow that can affect your thought process. So if we start to live in this virtual reality and we have, you know, outside sources trying to influence our perception of things or our ideals, you know, there are TikTok influencers that are talking about politics that know absolutely nothing about politics, but because of the figure that they are, they have an influence on people. It's tough to get someone into a world where it does seem like reality and you've got these messages coming in at you on a regular basis that could potentially influence your thought process. So I think just like how social media can be very manipulative, I think we are always at risk the more we try to kind of bring ourselves into this alternate reality kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, and how quickly humans are to adapt. So like there was a huge uproar against masks initially, and now it's like we just adapted so quickly to all wearing them. And I think it's maybe like an uproar at first, but we just keep moving through these changes. And I think that's how easily this can kind of come about, right? So, you know, a few people get virtual reality and then it just slowly pervades like most of the world. And I think I was listening to Joe Rogan. I think it was on Joe Rogan. He was saying like how some people would never be able to afford this technology either. So like the primitive people without virtual reality access would be living in almost like a completely different world than like affluent people could afford this change up too. So I know that's like a little bit different than esports, but these thoughts just like are insane to me.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because even in the, like thinking from like a class idea, mobile games, like in countries like India, where, you know, income isn't as high, people don't have access to like a lot of expensive tech, but mobile gaming is huge. And that's actually the reason that mobile gaming is, you know, the highest percentage of gamers in the world are on mobile, because in all of these countries like India, Indonesia, people are on phones constantly. And that's where all the mobile gaming is done. And it's like a totally separate world from, you know, gaming on PC on like an expensive gaming rig. But now we have, you know, cross play between systems, and that's starting to connect people. And so I think it's interesting how gaming can connect people and bring people together of, you know, totally different like societies. But I think, yeah, we are definitely going to see that shift where, you know, there's a lot of money going into tech right now. And I think, yeah, there could be that separation in the future where we have people that are living just on a totally different world and are exposed to totally different messages and influences. Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
I'm sure we could get down like so many theoretical rabbit holes. Like there's so many avenues that this could go, and like hopefully there's some sort of like protective safeguards in place. But I mean, as technology advances and like more money gets put into it, like that it's kind of can become the Wild West, right?
Yeah, no, there's it's really fascinating, like even to think back to, I want to say like during the like the 70s, where like in Eastern Bloc countries, or 60s or 70s, they were doing like physical testing on kids in schools to see if they were like the right fit for certain sports. Now we have this like MRI research coming out showing that certain areas of the brain are bigger in, you know, some pro gamers. Like they cerebral mass of like a certain lobe is associated with, you know, reaction time or decision accuracy and all these things. And so it's like, are we going to get to a level where we can pre-screen these KPIs and say like, you are going to be the next, like, you know, best esport athlete out there? I think there's, it's really interesting. Like we have, again, people are gathering so much information and trying to connect this, and it's going in a really interesting direction, but I think it's something that's going to continue to grow just with how much tech is exploding. Like the amount of increase in computing power we've seen in the past 5 years versus like the previous 50, it's just like, it's not even comparable. Like it's such an exponential curve on the development of tech that I can't possibly see it slowing down at this point. And that's, it's really cool, but it's also really scary and how like reliant we are on that now, especially, you know, during COVID. Like the internet is a necessity. We need this to actually do our jobs now. And it's not like before, I don't know. It's like when the power goes out, when the power go out and you're like, oh man, like, well, I won't have lights for a day or something, but now we lose internet. It's like, I can not function. Like everyone has data on their phone now. They have a constant contact to the web. And it's, yeah, our reliance on that's only going to grow. And it just means we have to be really careful with how we let outside sources kind of come in and influence that.
Yeah. And I hope, like, kind of, as you said, esport athletes are starting to move into this direction of like, you know, being mindful of these things and being mindful of their health overall, because it's just such a disadvantage on so many levels. Like even with COVID, like the people who got hit the hardest were the unhealthiest people, right? So yeah, I think like kind of pulling it back to the esports and what we would know right now, like creating the perfect esport athlete, I would say like nutrition would have to be a huge part of that. And like my thought process on it would be like brain health optimization in terms of, you know, as much fats to the brain as possible, like good healthy fats, as much hydration to the brain as possible. And that, like what you were saying of cueing eating times throughout the game to make sure you don't have like blood sugar crashes and stuff like that makes a lot of sense to me. And then on the physical activity realm, you're saying like some sort of program that could be put in place to keep the blood flow going to the brain as much as possible and the movement throughout the day. Hey.
Yeah, absolutely. So some sort of routine that's going to, you know, generally keep them healthy and hopefully allow them to kind of better regulate that autonomic nervous system, but also potentially improve their performance. And yeah, again, I think that's where we can see a bit of room to kind of look into how we can get that kind of transient response that's going to send them into their game feeling good and ready to perform, but then also kind of work on their health outside of that, both physical and mental, to allow them to continue to develop physically and hopefully positively impact their gaming performance.
Would there be like esport therapists? Does that exist right now?
There are, you know, like psychologists that do work with teams for the purpose of either, you know, like goal setting and just general mental health. But yeah, there are therapists that work with teams just because it's mental health has been a common issue, and like burnout's like a huge issue in esports. There's been a number of esport athletes that have had to take a break on competitive teams just because they were so burnt out from long hours of gaming. And so I think maybe people don't fully understand the impact that long hours of training or practicing video games can have on health. And I think that has to be an additional kind of area of research outside of, you know, what can we do to improve this? Well, how can we start managing these negative effects while also trying to improve the positive impacts we can create?
Yeah, what are like the high level salaries of like an esport athlete? Like how much money are we talking for the highest level?
I would say that at a high level they're making well over like six figures. I want to say around like 150 50K to 200 at the highest level. And then you've got like sponsorships on top of that. There was actually a really recent, I think it was like a crowdfunding for a tournament that happened, a video game called Dota. And they crowdfunded like $40 million for this prize pool. It was like absolutely insane. And this is just a mix of like investors and people that just want to see this competitive gameplay. It's pretty wild. Like the top teams are taking home like, I think 16 million from winning that. So it's just like, it's wild to me. And some of it's kind of weird because a lot of the investments in esports right now are from investors. So the teams can't really they don't have full control over the money they're given because it's from investing. You know, there's a team recently, I think they're a guild esports. They have a partnership with David Beckham, and this information was released that they actually paid David Beckham to be a partner with them. So it's, the money is kind of moving really strangely throughout the esports world, but it's there, but it's just like kind of a really kind of gray area of what they can do with that funding. And I think that's also part of the reason that, you know, bringing in more physical therapists or trainers with teams isn't going to be quite as big yet, because teams aren't actually allowed to allocate that money to those areas unless they're given permission. So there's a lot of kind of issues there financially that I don't even know a lot about, but I know that's been kind of a thing.
What are some of like the craziest stories you've heard from like esport athletes? Like, is there some really intense stuff that you've experienced or heard?
I mean, I've seen a lot of people like break equipment. I know that happens a lot. People smash keyboards, people smash monitors, and I don't think that's a great thing. I also think that, it's not like an overly wild sport, but I think that one thing, kind of a separate point, people are very progressive in the esports world. You know, they don't put up with, you know, racism, homophobia, that kind of thing, where like it has been present, I want to say, in other sports for a long time. And maybe that was just kind of with the generation that it was going through. But I think, and this isn't like a crazy thing, I think in the context of what you're thinking, but slightly different. A lot of, shouldn't say a lot, but a few esport teams now are welcoming or trying to recruit for like female only teams, which I think is really cool. I think that's something that maybe it's just has to do with the generation that we're coming up in with it. No, esports is really only just starting, and now we're very progressive from its beginnings, which I think is really cool as a sporting body.
I love that girls getting involved, and I think like, you know, obviously they've always been involved, but that initiative to, you know, really highlight how different girls' brains work too, like they would be such an advantage at some of the games, right?
Yeah, well, I think that's one thing that's funny is, you know, I just try to say that esports is very progressive, which I think it is. But there is still this idea in certain video game scenes where like women aren't as good at gaming. But I think it's more so because it's a predominantly male sport for the most part, and just has been even on like the casual side. But I want to say there's some research out there to show that women's reaction times are generally better than men's. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, even knowing that, it's like, how do we develop this idea that they're worse when, you know, they could be potentially better? It's just that we're drawing from a smaller sample. But it's really cool to see, you know, teams, big esports organizations actually doing this, and kind of allowing women to have like their own side and compete. I don't even know if it's going to be a separate league. I think they would compete kind of in the same league, because if you think about it, like physicality isn't the issue, right? Like kind of what separates like female sport for the most part is like, you can't have a 140 pound female fighting a, you know, 140 pound male just because the differences in physicality there. Now, a guy could get his ass kicked by a 140 pound female, but there are clear like biological differences that we need to account for there that I think are kind of destroyed in the context of esports. Like, it's just, this is you on this computer, other person's on this computer, and you're, the playing field is leveled, I guess. So I think it's a really cool way for, you know, men and women to actually compete at the same, in the same league. And I think that's actually going to cut out, you know, those wage gaps that we see between male and female sports, right? Like, we can have females competing for the same prize money as a male team, and that's not an issue, right?
Yeah, I love that. That's so awesome. And I think, like, I don't know, there's going to be so much to this. And I didn't even really like have it on my register until you kind of started talking to me about it. And I think there's so much we could do to help these athletes in terms of brain health, in terms of, you know, performance management. And it's such like an untapped market, it sounds like, hey?
Yeah, it's like, it's definitely growing and people are kind of seeing that now. And I think it's, as it becomes more like pop culture, people are starting to realize like, wow, there's a lot of eyes on esports and everyone's trying to get into it. But again, everyone's trying to get into it with no context as to what to do. And so there's like a million people out there trying to, you know, show you how to sit properly and then showing you all these different stretches. And I think someone's going to have to either come in and demonstrate that, you know, what we're doing is actually making a difference, or the research is going to have to come out and say like, look, this can actually improve your ability to play the game. We should start implementing this. But just like sports, it's the way you implement it and your ability to actually apply it to their context that's going to make the biggest difference. So yeah, it's blowing up and people are trying, but it's still, there's still so much we don't know, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, and kind of like with everything, like so much is coming out with like female athletics and the conventional athletic sense and stuff like that. And we really don't know for certain much or anything that's like, we can take this information and then apply it to these athletes. But I think, you know, from all of our understanding of brain health and all of our understanding of reaction time and taking information from other sports and kind of applying it to this sport, I think there's a really good sell for how beneficial it would be to have like a trainer involved in this sport. Hey,
yeah, for sure. And again, there's like, there are metrics that we have that we can quantify, they're just so few. And so it's like, we're trying to connect a huge amount of different physical metrics to a small amount of actual quantifiable metrics. Now, I know that my good friend, Jordan Tsai, who's working with the esports teams down in California, one thing they're trying to do is develop like a survey or a scale of looking at subjective feedback, because I think that's kind of our issue as well, is like, we have these few cognitive metrics that we can look at and actually quantify, and then our in-game stats, and then we have our, you know, subjective like team play, kind of the interaction of all these different components of the game. But then there's this like this huge gray area in between that there's so much going on in so many different games, and there's so many components. Like, video games are pretty intricate into how many different variables can actually influence the outcome, and I think that's what makes it really difficult to tie, you know, training to esports. But I think even with what we have on the health aspect of things, like, you shouldn't be done your esports career when you're 22 years old, because 22 years old is considered old in the gaming world, which is crazy. It's like, that's, you're only getting started. And so I think that's the key to actually having that longevity. Like, just like going to the combine, like, people are so worried when they go to the combine about all their different tests. But what they don't realize is like, your physical is one of the most important outcomes to your combine assessment. So if you're an esport athlete and you're signing at, you know, 19, 20 years old, what do you do after you know, 2-3 years down the line and you feel like garbage because you've been spending, you know, 8 hours a day sitting at a screen. I think the only way that we can actually improve that longevity and ultimately help these teams is to have that, you know, that physical training in there to allow them to, the athletes to be healthier humans. And again, hopefully get that performance improvement that we're looking for.
Yeah, man, that sounds awesome. And like, thanks for bringing this on my radar because like, it just wasn't something I really thought about before. So it's definitely good to have in the back pocket to say like, hey, things are coming down the line for this and keep an eye on it. If you could say like one thing to upcoming young gamers, like what would be your like go-to piece of advice for them?
Stay active, for sure. I think stay active is a big one. Like it's a huge part of your development, both like physically and like cerebral. Like it's a big part of brain development as well. And that is something we know. We know that there can be huge benefits to your brain development from just being physically active as a child. So even though it doesn't seem like there is a clear connection there, that's like a huge component of actually improving your performance in the long run, I feel. And it's just going to allow you to be a healthier athlete and do what you want to do for a lot longer.
I love it. So you're kind of a wealth of information on this, and it sounds like you're doing all the research to like keep learning every day about it. Can people reach out to you, or where can they find you?
Yeah, for sure. You can reach me on Instagram. It's probably the best place, at perform.irl. That's my Instagram handle. So yeah, any questions, you reach out to me there, and I'm happy to try and answer them for you.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for enlightening us about esports.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.